interrupting the current neo-uchronial, climate-challenged, behaviorally controlled, energy-starved, alien-invaded, nuclear-glowing, postulated cricketism to bring you behind the woodshed. This is Cricketude Busting Episode BTWRLM 592. And remember, being free is not a spectator sport, so get you behind the woodshed because you don't know what you've missed until you get behind the woodshed. It's pretty much that simple. Besides, being a spectator became a whole lot tougher in the post-Founding Father era Lincolnization P-A-T-R-I-O-T Act War of Terror, even for genocide-loving and former Congress critters, whom nevertheless appear to get a bit different treatment, given it's happened to hundreds of thousands of Americans before this time since 9/11, without any question. U.S. House Oversight Panel asked TSA about placing Tulsi Gabbard on a terror watch list. U.S. House Oversight Committee Chairman James Comer sent a letter on Friday to Transportation Security Administration Chief David Pekoske regarding whistleblower allegations that the agency placed former U.S. Congresswoman Tulsi Gabbard on a terror watch list. A whistleblower also disclosed that his wife was targeted with a special mission coverage because she attended former U.S. President Donald Trump's January 6, 2021 speech in Washington, but was nowhere near the U.S. Capitol that day, the letter said. Moreover, the whistleblower claims that the TSA classified the protected disclosure as a leak and initiated a retaliatory investigation. The letter requests information from TSA on actions taken with respect to employees linked to the disclosure regarding Gabbard and the air marshal's wife, as well as all information related to Gabbard and the Quiet Skies program. The letter also requests a brief briefing on a committee staff no later than August 30th. Quote, "It is alarming that TSA is wasting its resources to surveil an air marshal's wife and Ms. Gabbard, a high-profile American public figure, when the threat of terrorist attacks on the United States is high," the letter said. And there is here the misrepresentations inquiry I suggested needs to be done relative to all this before and ongoing. But why now and only her when hundreds of thousands of folks have been under scrutiny all this time? So let us see where this takes us in looking for a pathway to regain control of these tyrants acting without lawful cause, using the bare office that they tend to be, these agencies, as cover to terrorize people under this excuse that we, the people, are the terrorists. It seems to me, and I'm sure that it may have occurred to you, the entire U.S. government needs to be put on the terror watch list. And every move it makes, and every breath it takes, has someone watching. You. And for immediate action in relief. This marks the time when we can step up. There's at least an interest now. It may continue after the election. It all depends, but this is where we can step up instead of sitting around really doing nothing. We can start contributing where you can. There's a lot of people out there with a lot of good ideas. Let's start bringing them forward. But Tulsi Gabbard gets a little bit of a special treatment, it seemed to me. Even so, that's what we need. We need to start somewhere. And all this being tougher for everyone until, as I keep seeing, we got to step up and do something. However it comes up. Federal Appeals Court finds geofence warrants are categorically unconstitutional. And this was seemed to be a very huge, huge decision here, even though it's not, is it? Not at all. In a major decision on Friday, the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals held that the geofence warrants are, quote, categorically prohibited by the Fourth Amendment. Closely following arguments EFF has made in a number of cases, the court found that a geofence warrant constitute the sort of, quote, general exploratory rummaging that the drafters of the Fourth Amendment intended to outlaw. Well, I'm going to interject right here. We're going to get to a story near the end of the broadcast. I deemed it a fishing expedition. This is probably a better statement. General exploratory rummaging. And it violates the Fourth Amendment. The new Fifth Circuit Court case, United States versus Smith, involved an armed robbery and assault on a U.S. Postal Service worker at a post office in Mississippi in 2018. After several months of investigation, they obtained a geofence warrant covering a large geographic area around the post office for the hour surrounding the crime. Google responded to the warrant with information on several devices, ultimately leading police to the two defendants. On appeal, the Fifth Circuit reached several important holdings. First, it determined that under the Supreme Court's landmark ruling in Carpenter v. United States, Individuals have a reasonable expectation of privacy in the location data implicated by the geofence warrants. Second, the court found that even though investigators seek warrants for geofence location data, these searches are inherently unconstitutional. As the court noted, geofence warrants require a provider, almost always Google, and remember the antitrust suit that may break, maybe make, maybe Google's everywhere, which I'm not quite sure how they can actually pull that off, but anyway, we'll see. Almost always Google, to search the entirety of its reserve of location data, while law enforcement officials have no idea who they're looking for or whether the search will even turn up a result. Therefore, the quintessential problem with these warrants is that they never include a specific user to be identified, only a temporal and geographic location where any given user may turn up post-search. That is constitutionally insufficient. Unsurprisingly, however, the court found in 2018 the police could have relied on such a warrant in good faith because geofence technology was novel and police reached out to other agencies with more experience for guidance. This means that the evidence they obtained will not be suppressed in the case. Nevertheless, it is gratifying to see an appeals court recognize the fundamental invasions of privacy created by the warrants and uphold our constitutional tradition prohibiting general searches. Police around the country have increasingly relied on geofence warrants and other reverse warrants, and the opinion should act as a warning against narrow applications of the Fourth Amendment precedent in these cases. Why is it unsurprisingly that there is a good faith exception to the constitutional amendment? I'm not unsurprisingly, that's for sure. Where's that written right in there? I don't see one. So you see, it's still not quite fulfilling the Constitution, it seems. And not unsurprisingly, I have repeatedly mentioned in prior episodes behind which it, that whatever you thought was a right or forever protected, you'll have to make a law to preserve it. That even holds for Kanukistan, in particular under Tinkerbell Trudeau, as we read, Canada's Conservatives push back against digital dollar plans. The legislative effort is underway in Canada to enact a ban on central bank digital currency in the country. Bill 7400, Framework on the Access to and Use of Cash Act, spearheaded by the Conservatives, aims to prevent the creation of a CBDC and ensure that cash is guaranteed to remain an option for citizens. The bill has three main goals: access to cash that cannot be revoked in the future, a ban affecting the Bank of Canada Act, preventing the central bank from creating a digital Canadian dollar, and another amendment, that of the Currency Act, which now gives the finance minister the right to, quote, suddenly put out a call that all banknotes could be recalled. With C-400, the power now in the minister's portfolio would be restricted, the report says. The bill's sponsor, MP Ted Falk, explained the need for such legislation, saying it was necessary to make sure cash continues to be available as an essential part of their daily lives to the millions in Canada. This is particularly true of vulnerable categories of population, he said, but also charities, nonprofits, and remote communities. Boy, what about Kanukistan is not a remote community? Holy smokes. Last but not least, quote, in a world where government banks and corporations are increasingly infringing on the privacy rights of Canadians, cash remains the only true anonymous form of payment, Falk argued, in favor of C-400. And picking up on that, governments, banks, and corporations infringing on your privacy rights and to be able to preserve your right to determine proper health care even during a professed emergency, you'd likely need some more proof, and as we move this on, in your bag of law, an objective reality needs to be filled with these informations as I bring these on in trying to protect our privacy going forward. If you need a privacy, you better put it in law. There's a couple of ways to do that in places, typically. And as I said long ago, they're coming to shut the whole place down. And if you're going to carve out things, you better start real soon to at least get the black and white read simple that you have these things. Otherwise, they're going to be ignored. Again, the reflexive judiciary around the world, the rule of law and democracy, will make these decisions, certainly will make them wrong when they're not written. They'll make them when they're right, they are written, but at least you have a black and white to embarrass them with that they should have been. But here, now we move on to health care and your right to privacy and your right to understand and your right to consent. Everyone complained they didn't have the right of full disclosure and consent. Well, you did, but no one no one really thought about going to the communicable disease law that I had advocated for all these years. Now we hear the consequence and what you need to prove for yourself. These evidences coming forward now of the unintended consequences, so-called, actually intended for what I can tell being bioweapons. Denmark, Finland, and Norway graphs show all-cause mortality kept rising after the shots rolled out. Steve Kirsch writes, I got a tip from one of the colleagues that Denmark, Finland, and Norway had very similar vaccine policies. Mortality kept going up after shots. Denmark, Finland, and Norway kept impeccable statistics. I heard from the scientists in Denmark that the death stats there were flat until the shots rolled out. She also said that Denmark stopped reporting daily deaths and has switched to reporting deaths quarterly. Does having less information lead to better health outcomes, or are they hiding something? Similarly, in Norway, they stopped reporting COVID stats due to budget cuts. It had absolutely nothing to do with the numbers getting worse and worse, as 14 times for COVID, or 3 times for hospitalizations, and 3 times as much death. Here are the numbers. You decide. I think that the numbers are pretty incriminating. The deaths started getting worse after the COVID shots rolled out. If it wasn't the COVID shots, what is fueling the monotonic rise in excess deaths? Norway, since the mRNA experiment, shows a 14-time greater incidence after COVID. There are 3 times more hospitalizations and 3 times as much death relative to those numbers. You can get the link there, but you watch it, see it, get in your eyes, see it for yourself. And he says they won't be publishing stats anymore due to budget cuts. That's convenient, isn't it, folks? Well, they go and go to war everywhere with Russia, no less, help Ukraine. They have had a clear continuous decline in mortality among those under 60 in the period from 2000 to 2019. Now it seems that this trend has reversed. So I'll let you get the link again. Read it more. See the charts. And I wish Steve would stop staring at the carnage and begin to explain to people how to avoid the carnage he finds statistically after the fact. Same charts he could bring up, but different, more important, and helpful message could be sent by showing those charts, the carnage, but then saying, here, this is how we're going to avoid it next time, as I've been advocating, unless he finds something more and better than I have to rely on that communicable disease law. And I've asked him about this, as I have others having influence many times to do this. So why does he not? I don't really know. What's in it for him or them that they won't and don't? I'm always a question on that. Who are these folks that won't listen to law, actually? Listen to reason and law and protections? They got their own little thing going. Even KenKim.com is the same way. And despite he took the jab and now knows better, he thinks, he'll do the same thing. Everyone focuses on the carnage, on the sensational, but won't turn around and say, okay, because of this, we see this stuff isn't meant for good. They don't intend to protect us. They don't intend to be able to want to protect us. And therefore, I'm informed and I have the last say, given a communicable disease law in every country I've found, rule of law and democracy for sure. All says that the doctor-patient relationship is sacrosanct. The doctor has exclusive jurisdiction, but not to the oppression of the patient who has final say. And so you start to work from that angle, and all these guys that are doing yeoman's work to pull out these statistics and to expose it, great, but their message could change, and they could actually be showing you, here's what the data is saying, here's how we're going to stop that next time, so this doesn't happen to people. There's something else that obstructs the clear thinking about this, as everyone does their little agenda, I suppose. I haven't figured this one out. Why no one responds? All these guys that have influence, lots of people follow them. They just want to keep beating their drum a little. Look what I found. Look what I found. Let's say, okay, you found an accident with dead bodies. Now what? What do? We go back and fix the road and put up some guardrails? We don't have to put them up. They're already there. I would point to them, make sure that everyone follows them next time to protect themselves. But to hear better courses of thinking may be obstructed. Alzheimer's and Parkinson's, what causes neurodegenerative diseases and how can they be staved off? Alzheimer's disease has become a major problem for the, quote, development of society in any country in the world and a, quote, risk for the entire mankind, says Sergei Ilaroyskin, member of the Russian Academy of Sciences and deputy head of the Research Center of Neurology. With at least 35 to 40 million people across the world today suffering from either Alzheimer's or Parkinson's disease, per the most conservative estimates, their number is expected to double by 2035 and quadruple by 2050, he warns. I wonder why, folks. Well, let's get into the story and get to the punchline. What can cause Alzheimer's? There is a number of factors that essentially determine the development for neurodegenerative diseases. One such factor, probably the most well-known, is aging. Neurons being post-mitotic cells are incapable of division, which along their hyperspecialization means that they lack certain defense mechanisms. And Ilo Royskin explains this in the communication here in the report. And other factors include neurotoxins that humans inevitably come into contact with. Inevitably, folks. Quote, a number of studies show that agrochemical toxins, which are previously used aggressively in agriculture, directly cause Alzheimer's and Parkinson's disease. The effect of these substances was confirmed by experiments on cell cultures and lab animals. They induce changes reproducing those diseases one for one. Ah, here, we got agrotoxins, two now. And I think we're getting closer to the actual point. As we continue to read, yet another factor described as unusual is the effect of infections, with recent studies revealing the people who suffered from COVID-19 are more prone to Alzheimer's than similarly aged people who did not contract COVID-19. Now there, we've finally gotten to it, haven't we? Except symptoms called COVID-19 can't cause anything. We'll keep that in track. But this is what's exposing. Quadrupled because of this injection, seems to me here. People suffered with symptoms, not because of symptoms. So you have to really understand it. Whenever everybody's speaking about COVID-19, they're not talking about an infectious agent. They're talking strictly symptoms, and nobody dies from symptoms. And this is where the destruction of our critical thinking can start to happen. And we know the data has been available to prove all this, the jabs, at least some batches now, we hear, which increased over time by new formulations not disclosed, are neurotoxic. So this article comes to tell us that that's what's been going on, and that is the purpose of this article, trying to cover up these other things. It doesn't mean those other things aren't there. We see the compounding of the problem since the COVID-19 symptoms hit people, which we know now that covers the actual jab at warp speed. It hides those bioweapon effects in plain sight, just like the 9/11 proof in plain sight, which warp speed attack is dubbed, that I did at 2019, was hindsight 2020. If you'll kindly remember that, this was expected to come through. I explained how they were setting this up. And looking at the year was a neat numerological setup for us if we just paid attention. And very few did. And those that you did work it out, you did see there was no authority whatsoever, and you didn't get affected by it, or nearly as much. I just think there was just not enough people doing the right discussion relative to, you don't even have to go to court. You just say no with the administration. You haven't done what was required under law. But anyway, moving through this and showing that the consequences of a warp speed of attack that they're trying to tell us here to anticipate the quadrupling of Alzheimer's and Parkinson's disease due to the jab, which will likely fall quietly here from any causation, as they've been trying to whisk it under the carpet as it's been going year after year here now. So get the article from the link in the Behind a Woodshed blogcaster and read what might be done. Like one of the things, for instance, you'll read is of a couple of things that they mentioned. The lack of physical activity is the most important confirmed neurodegenerative disease risk factor. So I'll suggest, but you won't find it written in the article, one more thing will be to don't take any safe and effective jabs and work to cleanse your system if you have taken it. And there are a number of things, and I've talked about and brought them forward just in the blogcasters over the years. There's lots of people online talking about what you can do, things that can be found to try to clear these biotoxins from your system. And I've seen some people respond to their own therapies, and it does clear things up. So if you've taken the jab, I told you this long ago, I'm not the kind of guy to say, oh, look, we told you so. No, people got duped, feared into doing it. Now we got to fix you. Don't take the responsibility to try and fix yourself. A lot of people are doing it. You got to pay attention. And since I have never seen any one thing usually work as a silver bullet necessarily, ivermectin's kind of coming close, isn't it? hydroxychloroquine is kind of coming close, though, isn't it? So look at those. Those are not necessary toxin removers, biotoxin removers. But look carefully. There are some supplements that you can get and things to do. So don't. It's not a. If you have this problem or you think you have it because you did get the jab, don't give up. Start keep working and clean up your life. How's that? We just clean up our lives and try to get it to go better. And it might. Here, we found out here, it helps on top, it works on top, compounding the effects of another biotoxin, now newly admitted already, almost, by the government, that it puts in your safe and effective drinking water. So here we have, watch the compounding problem, works synergistically to take you down. As we can read, the government report links excessive fluoride in water to lowered IQs in kids. So your little goats are at risk here. How many of us have done the research to know this wasn't even a question? How come it's taken so long for the big, bad, bottomless pit funding government to not come up with this years ago? But high levels of fluoride in drinking water may dim the intelligence of children, a new U.S. government report shows. Based on analysis of published research, the potentially controversial report marks the first time a federal agency has determined there is a link between drinking twice the recommended amount of fluoride and lower IQs in kids. Since 1945, the U.S. of fluoride has been a successful mental health initiative for reducing dental cavities and improving dental oral health of adults and children, the report stated. Let me just interject. I'm not really sure I've found that to be true either. However, let's just go with this. We've already known about the fluoride, so it's important that the United States government at least blinks even a little bit here. Quote, there is a concern, however, that some of the pregnant women and children may be getting more fluoride than they need because they now get fluoride from many sources, including treated public water, water-added foods and beverages, teas, toothpaste, floss, and mouthwash. If a lot of you folks didn't think you were already getting fluoride in a lot of these other products. And the combined total intake of fluoride may exceed safe amounts. Another hesitation there may. Importantly, quote, the determination about lower IQs in children was based primarily on epidemiology studies in non-U.S. countries such as Kyrgyzstan, China, India, Iran, Pakistan, and Mexico, where some pregnant women, infants, and children received total fluoride exposure amounts higher than 1.5 milligrams fluoride per liter of drinking water. The report author stated, quote, the U.S. Public Health Service currently recommends 0.7 milligrams per liter, and the World Health Organization has set a safe limit for fluoride in drinking water to 1.5 milligrams per liter. One expert welcomed the findings. Quote, I think this report is crucial in our understanding of this risk. Ashley Malin of the University of Florida researcher who recently published a study on the effect of high fluoride levels in pregnant women on their children. So this is about time, I think, finally. I've been saying this for almost ever now as we've been moving and broadcasting. And I know a lot of the listeners knew that. And we know the government's not there to come straight up. It's more about the commerce and whether or not they can get away with it. And finally, a lot of you, this is probably from a lot of your work, who stepped up and kept slamming them. They finally had to start looking because I'm telling you, it's too embarrassing to not say it when it's right in everybody else's face. So, but how dumb are you now under this expert fluoride care of the government pharma industrial complex that's been going on? It's hard to tell. Again, remember all those products I just said, they say they're telling you that there's been fluoride in all of that. So whomever we might be, we won't know what effects we've been having. And I have the study and the almost part of it. We'll read there about what they do. They hesitated. They don't want to commit fully. Fluoride exposure, neurodevelopment, and cognition of these findings. The NDV monograph concluded that higher levels of fluoride exposure, such as drinking water containing more than 1.5 milligrams of fluoride per liter, are associated with lower IQ in children. The NTP review was designed to evaluate total fluoride exposure from all sources and was not designed to evaluate the health effects of fluoridated drinking water alone. It is important to note, however, here we are, there's your hesitation. We're not going to take full possession of this one. It is important to note, however, that there were insufficient data to determine if the low fluoride level of 0.7 milligrams per liter currently recommended for the United States community water supplies has a negative effect on children's IQ. So there you go, the almost. It is important to note, however, But how about we now kick these health quacks to the curb and finally ban the known neurotoxin? Like, I understand a couple of jurisdictions that have somewhere. I can't remember now where they are, but people have done that. As I said, if you want to preserve yourself, you better make a law about it somehow and make it a good one. Think clearly on how you get that to work. A lot of people don't have a clue how that works. And I've been up against that. People want to make laws protecting, but they don't really understand the subject matter. Don't be that guy or gal. Just do it better. But do it. Don't sit back. The government's not going to be here. So you have to make it a law to protect you, not leave it to the government, because the government will kill you. It literally will take you out at warp speed, too. Not just the slow-ish motion mental death, but they do it at warp speed. If you needed an example other than the slow and steady decline that we're seeing here. And again, we don't know what we're under. We think we're thinking clearly. We think we're doing it right, but we don't really know, do we? It just seems, if you realize it's a neurotoxin and it's causing a mental harm, why would you take any more in your body at all? Not the 0.7 the government wants to take and not prove whether or not it's a contributor. That's close enough for me. That's all I can tell you. And if you do need fluoride for your teeth, just put it topically on your teeth. That's it. Don't swallow kind of thing. Yes, there might be a little bit, but if you need it, if you need some, you need some. So figure out how and when and how much, and take responsibility for that. But here we come. Here's your bag of law and harma to be able to be someone who has some information that can defend themselves, even when a doctor, who you would think might have your best care would maybe suggest otherwise. And so what else here causes neurological damage that Neuralink and the like companies will be more than happy to profit from? And I'm only going to touch the high spots on this story here. This is from a Midwestern doctor. How do vaccines cause autism? This has been another story that there's denial about what's going on. Now the doctor, a Midwestern doctor, steps up to explain this. How this works. And I'm just going to touch the high spots. It's a very detailed article that you can go through and read. How do vaccines cause autism? In my eyes, there are three core reasons why vaccines cause autism. One, they create chronic neurological inflammation. Just remember what I just said about the Alzheimer's and the dementia and then the COVID being found to aggravate those, as we heard that early on as well. The chronic neurological inflammation. Inflammation generally is not a good thing. You're alive, your body's working, but it's not a good thing to have all the time going on for sure. Number two, they cause a zeta potential collapse. Number three, they create a sustained cell danger response in the body. Additionally, each of these can cause the other two, making their separation be somewhat arbitrary. There are a few important correlates of these three processes. The first is that things besides vaccines can also trigger each of these to occur, e.g. the congenital rubella infection. The difference with vaccinations is that they are highly likely to cause each of these, and more importantly, for something almost every child is exposed to. As a result, the most common trigger for autism is vaccination, but other things can also serve as a trigger for each of these processes. And let me interject here, as I didn't catch it, but I'm catching it now. This is how I think when I'm looking at problems. I'm looking at for the cause. I'm looking under how to solve it. You're looking at body processes. How does your immune system process? How does it work? It's fascinating when you get into it, but how does it try to work out? So then you're looking at the functions of the system to do what it's doing and try to understand those right. So this was a very important article I thought for. He's focusing on the processes. And so I just want to interject that. I would concur. I didn't notice that before when I read it. It didn't quite make this impression as I'm reading it right now. He's focused on processes. I think you need to focus on processes. Again, how is the body responding to what it's being fed, if you will, or absorbing or being addressed, infringed with? This helps to explain much of the confusion on exactly what causes autism to look at these processes. Secondly, here, these are the same critical processes that underlie many other diseases, such as Alzheimer's and the myriad COVID-19 vaccine injuries. One of the most compelling data points I have come across supporting this relationship comes from Ed Dowd's recent discovery of England's disability claims data, within which the rate of adult autism requiring disability support spiked in parallel with the vaccine rollout. And again, I'm just going to read this, but we realized there was no vaccine. Vaccines didn't exist, and I went through why that is under communicable disease law. Any of you who've read that, you'll know why. You just already know it. You don't have to worry about it. if you don't go read it, find that you have to have an infectious agent that was non-fraudulently demonstrated, and then a substance, a medicine, needs to be used that stops that very infectious agent. That's essentially what a vaccine does, and without that, you don't have a vaccine. So go read for that. Those of you who haven't seen your communicable disease law finding, and read for that, and you'll find it. It's right there to be read. Third, most of the treatments I have seen that effectively treat autism ultimately addressed one or more of these processes. For example, one large survey with autistic children found virtually all the medications they were prescribed did not help, but four things did in this regard: addressing food allergies, for instance, by removing gluten from the diet, addressing an underlying candida infection, addressing genetically impaired methylation, removing heavy metals from the body, and there are a few other treatments. I have also seen significantly improved regressive autism, and I believe each of these treatments likewise improves one or more of the three critical processes. Many of these treatments have also been quite helpful in treating COVID-19 vaccine injuries, so I believe they are even more important to understand. So here, there's a lot to read in this discussion. Please, if you're interested at all in this subject matter, get the link at the Behind the Woodshed Blogcaster and read this extensive article. You can't wait for the government to come clean on almost, right? So take it up. I know a lot of you folks that have kids that have this do, but this is probably the first concise discussion, again, in processes, focusing on things that you can now track down. You start looking at what your body's systems are doing that have been interfered with. Another subject of the HARMA. Statins are HARMA trash, research mounts. On a long enough timeline, most medical scams, even the most persistent ones, have a way of unraveling. Quote, there's an old saying in Tennessee. I know it's in Texas, probably in Tennessee. It says, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me, you can't get fooled again. As stated by George W. Bush. But every major pharmaceutical firm in the West, Pfizer, AstraZeneca, Merck, et al., has its own proprietary statin drug, which together represents billions of dollars in sales annually in the U.S. alone. The flimsy lack cholesterol cause heart disease lie is predicated on flawed and manipulated studies going back decades that reportedly demonstrate a correlation between the high cholesterol and heart disease, which is simply taken as causation on faith. Even though, in other cases, conveniently, ones where the industry's interests align with dismissing correlation as causation, they are adamant that two are not one and the same. And I wanted to reiterate, this is so important, the failure. COVID-19 was symptoms, and people commingled that with causation. And that was a killer mental block for most people. It still is today. I'm watching it. People will say COVID-19. It's not an inconsequential error, mental error, to do this. And I think it furthers and perpetrates a problem. And I think they're actually paying attention. Some of the influencers are doing it less. I'll just say it that way. Some aren't. Some will continue to say COVID-19. And I don't like to correct too many times, but I do correct people when they have a big following and people are missing it. I don't get any response for that. No one says anything, whether or not they even look at it. The point is I want at least a record to counter the statement and the misdirection, the misinterpretation, with what people may look in the future to say, oh, wait a minute, there's another thing to look at here. Because this was a big one. Confusing COVID-19 or COVID with the causative agent is a serious defect. And it also interferes with the understanding of the communicable disease law when you go read it, if you're not paying too much of attention, just trying to read through it. Anyway, this article via DataBridge Market Research, quote, between 2015 and 2018, approximately 11.4% of U.S. adults had a high total cholesterol. There was no significant difference in high total cholesterol prevalence between men at 10.5% and women at 12.1%. The highest prevalence was among adults aged 40 to 59 at 15.7%, compared to 7% among those aged 20 to 39 and 11.4% among those aged 60 and over. Adults aged 60 and over also had a higher prevalence of high total cholesterol than those aged 20 to 39. There was no significant differences in high total cholesterol prevalence among adults based on race or Hispanic origin. To facilitate more statin prescriptions, the industry developed calculators for adult child doctors to use into which they punched in a bunch of numbers, and the computer then tells them whether their patient needs statins. They always do somehow. It turns out, you'll be shocked to learn, the calculators overestimated the risk of heart disease by 600%. Here, I just barely, for the sake of time, scratched the surface on this deception. If you have an hour to kill, check out Midwestern Doctor's extensive article on the topic and throw the statin prescription in the trash, or better yet, in your doctor's face. Even better yet, just don't go to the doctors for nutrition or metabolic counseling. Now, your mileage will vary on your studies. I say do them. Get yourself the body of knowledge you need about your body, for sure. And so this statin is not even, the statin Harma, not necessarily even a new story, but to see people now pulling it together, this will be the power of the internet. This is what the they do not want us to do, and work it through, and being able to work it through on our own. And we're just going to have enough fortitude, internal fortitude, to work right through anybody who wants to come and think they're an authority. They are an authority, no authority, and they want to tell you something. You got to have it in your mind, not just to flip them off. You explain. You start flipping them off, you become that extremist that they can beat you down with. You show them in the law where you have the right and they don't. Their epidemiology is useless against your rights here and here and here. And how? And then you have a body of knowledge behind it. You're then creating at least an argument that they can't impose. At least an argument. And so, if you don't have it, the authority wins, because that's the way the place is wired. The bureaucrat, the bureaucrat wins. But moving on here through this, this became a lot more into these harmas and medical treatments and things that are going on than I had expected when I started to think about this week's content. But these all come together, and I've told you I tend to run with the direction that the notice to us is going that week, if I can look forward and see it's going to take us somewhere, or take you somewhere, actually, and give you some advanced knowledge, which I think, moving into what we're hearing in the world relative to health matters and all the days that want to take that out from us, these were important informations to revisit, see the consequences, see what might be going on, refresh our minds. I want to keep a bit of the pressure on to remind you all to do the communicable disease law. That's a really nice, concise, small place to understand what due process is about, even in the face of the worst thing the government can come and bring against us. As I told you early on, there's going to be a defense against it if they can't show anything more than fraud. There's really not going to be much they can actually do. And it becomes tough when there's a big pile of pressure on the government and there's very little people that would do it. So if we have an informed populace, not a feared populace, then we're going to be able to withstand the most heinous things, I suppose. And I said, they can be ready to be shocked, I would say, because that's part of the effect. To help counter these side effects as well, moving on through, how do we get through this, take our knowledge, start applying it. The side effects that were caused by such a wonderful government health at warp speed, and I don't have much more info to offer because this next reference is from a pay site, and I don't do the trials, but you'll at least be able to see that someone made the statement, and this might be here the follow-up study that I reported I have offered long ago behind a woodshed relative to ivermectin testing against 28 types of cancer. Which cancers were the most sensitive to ivermectin and which are the least sensitive? The question on the article, and to see that rest, you can sign up for the trial term. I don't do that. What I did do is I searched real quick to see if I can find some surrogates for it and see, just to bring it together a little bit more, that ivermectin, I think this really is one of those wonder drugs. The more I see about this, although I haven't had a ton of time to search it, it's really very interesting. How it works is just fascinating. And this was pharma done right, I think, ultimately, how this was made. But here we have a study I found different referencing, mentioning the 28 cancers affected. If you'd like to track down some of the similar studies, the links are, again, in the blogcaster, as I put them, at realLibertyMedia.com. And this one, ivermectin synergizes sorafenib in hepatocellular carcinoma via targeting multiple oncogenic pathways. Advanced hepatocellular carcinoma results in generally poor clinical outcomes and necessitates better therapeutic strategies. Ivermectin, which is an existing antiparasitic drug, has been recently identified as a novel anti-cancer drug. In line with previous efforts, this work demonstrates the translational potential of ivermectin to treat advanced HCC. We demonstrated that ivermectin at clinically relevant concentrations was active against growth and survival in multiple HCC cell lines. So who knows? No, not the Rock Group, not the World Health Organization, not the OWL, not even the little people who know, but anyone who might know someone who turbo cancer came to visit them here recently. You need to check this information out. Help them put two and two together for themselves. I'm sure that's another fear to have to overcome as well. Or just anybody who might have, you know, anyone with cancer, start looking at this information. Again, it's not 100%, not a silver bullet, but it might help you. And more are these ivermectin studies about cancer. And it's an anti-parasitic. Just think about that. Yeah, very interesting that it's taking out some cancers. What are cancers? Is it interesting to me? And there's lots of theories about it. I'm just maybe just talking here just to expose that we'd really maybe not know totally what it might be. But this stuff, this ivermectin, can take out some, and some at varying levels. And all this studies are coming down now since the Covey swindle. This is the thing. The Covey swindle brought this out, which wasn't known before. So I have to give at least Covey swindle that much. But I have a friend that died of cancer, and it's not known to be jab cause. Again, there's people dying, heart attacks, all the time, and none of these people that I know have had jab, but the health issues that happen. They did before, and they're going to continue. But he died of cancer, and don't know there was jab cause, and I've wondered since these studies if this might have helped stop his cancer. And so that, you know, there's always that question, could he still be alive if he just would have known about this just here a year and a half ago, maybe two. And so don't delay, and don't give up. Look at these studies, and let's hope something, if you have something, maybe something like this will help you work that out. So a type of cancer here that ivermectin likely would not cure, as we move on, and move past the health problems that seem to have perked up. Again, COVID-19 warp speed jabs are causing a synergistic increase in their comorbidity involvements and cause problems. So don't underestimate that one. But the type of cancer that ivermectin likely would not cure unless the MIND virus is caused by a parasite. The stoking of class warfare, Kamala Harris intends through Biden's brain economic proposals, as I discussed last episode, is walking us into this part of the same plan, essentially. I wish maybe ivermectin would fix this. Well, maybe. Maybe if everybody got it, maybe the mind viruses, the parasites in people would go away and they'd feel better and they would have another better thought in their mind instead of trying to hurt each other. But the U.S. lashes out abroad, represses dissent at home as global hegemony slips away. Now, here's the dynamic of the future. I'm believing it's a plan. I know it's easy to say that, but I've told you why it looks like it's a plan. And I've talked to you about parity, and I've talked to you about the existing financial global system that's not going to change, that everybody points to now, that they claim they're all different, but they're all pointing to that one. And a lot of other little things sit here, and we see the reactions of the United States, and it doesn't seem to be moral to me what's going on, but neither here nor there. The controller is the United States underneath this, and let's say the CIA. So let's just keep that sitting here. But there is a noted rising repression within the United States alongside its efforts to maintain global influence with the FBI raid on the home of former U.S. Marine Intelligence Officer Scott Ritter, representing authorities' latest attempt to intimidate domestic critics. You see, and because of the subject matter today and Telegram in the news, which I'm going to be talking here in a bit, do not underestimate the involvement of the CIA. They mentioned the FBI. It's like a misdirection. But the CIA in this, or of France, given its continuing, though diminishing, if we know to read the news, diminishing influence and interest in the colonialization of France, with Russia sitting in Africa, France's adversary in Africa, all this stuff sits here underneath the skin of what I'm talking about, why I even bring this stuff out, to maybe inform us of the complex interdynamics that's going on in the world. Again, to be heads-on, looking right at it, and understand what we're seeing, looking through the noise, looking through the costumes, looking through all the veils, to be able to see what might be going on, so you're not standing in the way of somebody's intention against you, and you don't maybe without this knowledge, you wouldn't even know you were standing there at that point. But U.S. hegemony has taken a beating in recent years. The use of the dollar is on the decline, threatening to undermine the basis of the country's economic power. The use of the dollar is on is on the decline, threatening to undermine the basis of the country's economic power. In its proxy war in Ukraine is faltering, with the prospect of a second Donald Trump presidency threatening to deliver the finishing blow. I read this stuff, I want to say so much, but let me interject without too much here. I know some of my listeners understand this, but I'm going to say it anyway for those that maybe not haven't heard it. All these things are set up as a seed plant. Do not believe that there's a savior out there. These folks are in places because they've been allowed to be, essentially. When you read through what's going on, especially in the world, especially with France, especially with Telegram, now with actual media, even talking a little bit about that in late breaking. But understand we've got this thing going underneath. Notwithstanding everybody saying there's a change, multipolarity. No, this is all part of how this whole entire world gets directed. And surprising people are involved, which you wouldn't think. They all seem to be working against each other, and they're not really doing that. So be very cautious. As I read this, I'm not saying I'm saying these are 100% correct. As I guess I have to give the caveat here. What I'm saying is there's a train of thought we can use to guide us into looking at these very important things that are going on that point out all these little details that we have to keep track of, and then to qualify or quantify or be able to place them in places so that they're either the noise or they become the very important point we're going to need to analyze. This article goes on, in Gaza, it is widely considered to be backing a genocide. Its global image has suffered, the favorability ratings cratering the Middle East in particular. The United States has reportedly been attempting to shore up its influence where possible, most recently in Libya, which is still suffering the consequences of a coup backed by former President Barack Obama. And as I've been saying, as abroad, over there, it is done to you here at home, as seen through that carnival mirror optics that we go on. So keep that in mind. As we're reading these stories, we're looking at ourselves. And I would have to heart say there's going to be a lot of people that couldn't argue with that anymore. And I'm hoping so. Pan-Africanist organizer Netfa Freeman speculated the United States would seek to foment a civil war in Libya to attempt to force Russia out of the country. Baraka recalled the creation of AFRICOM was a tool to expand U.S. influence in Africa in 2008, after which it was expanded dramatically by President Barack Obama. Interesting names together, aren't they? Well, unless there's a lot of those folks all of a sudden, I don't know. Just, I find it interesting, the consistency with those names, as I said over and over. These names are very interesting. They act as bridges as well through time and conditions and situations. Host Wilmer Leon noted rising repression within the United States alongside its efforts to maintain global influence. So here we are to us in the United States, rising repression within the United States alongside its efforts to maintain the global influence, as I reflect on the global carnival mirror over there and here. With the recent FBI raid on the home of Sputnik's contributor Scott Ritter, representing authorities' latest attempts to intimidate domestic critics, a number of political prisoners such as Mumia Abu Jamal, Leonard Peltier, Jamil Elmin remain incarcerated on trumped up charges. And remember, Trump did not do this, right? He didn't free Assange. And again, there's no savers in this, it seems to me. We're going to have to really get our observation goggles on and our thinking hats clearly in place. At some point, we have to go through this history that is being planned, and we have to use those players if we can, if we're at all capable as a people, globally, in our spots. Use these people that are being placed in our way or to further the agenda, to use them in our what we need, if we can. So moving on here with all that, we talk civil war, what they are bringing up, relative to what I was talking about with Kamala Harris in the prior article in Class Warfare, and here the foreign to an actual Marxist agency through her, as well as some other things, again, it's not so simple anymore to pigeonhole anybody in an ism. And it's been these facets of the corruption have been built over decades and generations. So be careful not to pigeonhole your thoughts as well as I read through some of these things. Again, this is the fomenting of distress in the country to the point of civil war. Quote, people need to understand that these are moves being made by the state that will have a deleterious impact on all of us, noted Baraka. We've already seen the state pick up its repression. But the desperation of the state, it has lost the narrative on Gaza and the entire rationale for the imperialist project. Their object is to silence voices to intimidate potential opposition. That's why they reacted in such a violent way to the anti-genocide protests that were taking place on college campuses. Let me interject here. I'm not so sure those were organic protests. There was some truth in them, but it seemed like they had a big Zionist impression put in there, and it would make people hate the response. The consequence, actually, of their violence of these protests would cause an adverse reaction, so you'd be antagonistic to a Palestinian empathy. And so I'd be cautious about picking this up and say that they were strictly some Palestinian support. I think they were actually fomented by maybe the CIA or the Zionist Mossad or somebody else. And anyway, you can figure out for yourself what that meant. The point here is that they're fomenting division. They're fomenting these things that if you look in the world, it's just immoral to be killing people off just for no civilians. It just doesn't match any law I know. And yet it's been going on for almost a year. Quote, "So this is the fascistic environment that we find ourselves in today," Baraka concluded. "And the cutting edge of the main target of this is going to be, and always has been, the black liberation movement, black radicals. So we are getting ourselves ready for the intensified scrutiny and repression." Now, I keep using this word repression, and I'm not sure that it quite fits, but this is their words. It's what they're saying and seeing. It's how they're communicating to us. And so someone who is representing some pan-Africanist view is explaining there's trouble on the horizon. And we can see Kamala also embracing a bit of this. As I understand it, East Indian descent identifying as a black now, right? So understand, these that we're talking about here are not the only points to be considered. And I don't offer these articles as any definitive roadmap more than a conceptual or contextual trailhead for further study. So it's important more, it's actually imperative to form your own perspectives. Make sure you can pick through this information correctly, and not merely from the references, but as they are applied and qualified to other sources as well. Go ahead and be the journalist. Start proving out in more than one source. You got to keep backtracking. I'm noticing some stuff coming through right now that are very important information, but all the sources lead back to one guy. That may not be the totality of what you want to hang your hat on. It is not inconsequential what's being said there, though, so it's part of the narrative that's going on. And look at it like a narrative, then, because it's not independent and not free. All right? It does have a connection somewhere underneath the skin that we haven't seen yet. So form your own perspective, and that's done by a better, diligent study, broad spectrum. You then have to apply that information and qualify it and develop that comprehensive, if not intuitive, awareness. And that's the other thing I find very powerful. There's things you intuit, if you will. You will sense it. After all your reading, you can do it beforehand, but it's much more powerful when you start to actually intuitively understand. You look right through and see there's something that just forms up right for you. It's the answer, an answer forms to you. So don't disregard that. Once you have a body of knowledge you can trust for yourself, don't underestimate the power of an intuition or the voice in your head, if you will, as long as it's a good voice. Sometimes they're not too good, but anyway. So you need that in these quickly moving dynamics caused by those that don't have anyone's interest but their own in mind, especially if they're coming against you. And they don't care who they hurt to get what they want. All the while, they smile and tell you how much they are helping you. I've talked about this before, even in agency, the big old cheesy smile they give you as they're shaking their hand like they're there to help you. Boy, they want to stab you. Don't turn your back on them. They'll stab you in a heartbeat. Some of us have seen that, and we know what that is. This is happening on the world stage now. But they're helping you, all right, but they're helping you out of your stuff, your peaceful existence, while they profit from the chaos they've created, putting you at war with others. So you just don't let them do that. Have enough awareness just to not let them engage you. I'm talking this generally on the globe, the people of the world. This is what's happening. I don't know how they figured out how they do it. They just know it's better than themselves. I guess I already know why. I've read it. The Protocols of the Elders of Zion. Just go read it as a human frailties manual. And then don't miss the antidote you have in you. And I'll leave that there. I believe you need to find that out yourself. So as Kamala Harris, Kamala Mean, intends class warfare, is there any further question that the lead creator of color revolutions around the world to topple governments is the CIA, as we see CIA endorsing Kamala Mean Harris as Democrats promise more war and foreign intervention. So, do we need to know more here? Really? Again, there's no saviors. And I don't know what we do in the interim as we move through, but we can't glom onto these folks like they're going to do anything. And also, even if they were, they're only going to be, at these levels, if they were in good shape, they're only going to last there for a few years. And you see how quickly things, we're now experiencing, now we've witnessed how quickly things can change. One president puts stuff in, the next president takes it all away. It's nothing stable anymore. A former chief of the controversial intelligence agency voiced his support for the vice president of the Democratic National Convention Thursday. And remember, look how they're doing this, the former CIA, right? So watch this trick. U.S. Vice President Kamala Harris signaled she would continue her predecessor's hawkish foreign policy in Gaza and Ukraine Thursday as an ex-CIA director publicly endorsed the Democratic presidential candidate. Again, Zionist loving. There's nothing moral about this whole thing going on. Former intelligence, neither party is a uniparty. There's no distinction between them. If you look around, there's very few that aren't bought, essentially, by the Zionist lobby, as I reported last episode. You can go back and through and read it. Go and find it down. Track it down. So that it's not a question to you if it's important to understand. Former intelligence chief Leon Panetta also delivered a speech praising Harris during which the controversial figure claimed he was, quote, proud, unquote, to have served in the U.S. Army and as a CIA director. U.S. military aggression throughout the Middle East during the so-called War on Terror is estimated, it was started by the War of Terror against us all, is estimated to have caused the deaths of 4.5 million people, while the CIA has been implicated in numerous human rights violations. The Democrats really showed that this is a hawkish party, and really neoconservatives are in charge of the party, noted Covert Action Magazine manager, editor Jeremy Kuzmarov of Sputnik's The Final Countdown program. Quote, I mean, they brought out Leon Panetta earlier tonight. He's a former CIA director who was a key mastermind of the drone war, Obama, and a key figure behind Russiagate fraud, and a key supporter of Hillary Clinton. Don't forget Benghazi. Never forget, folks. And a chief of staff of the Bill Clinton White House. And I hope there's no rope and a shotgun near any one of you, folks. Very interesting things happen around those two and these people. So this is an interesting tactic that he's doing here to promote more war. The former head of the CIA's exalted speaker plausibly offering only his opinion, but carrying the weight of the CIA indirectly, national, to influence an election. So do you think Panetta magically lost connection to the CIA if you don't think that? No, I don't think these folks ever really go away. Not the insiders. So given this history of the CIA and Panetta's restatement of its culture and intent, wouldn't it be valid to inquire upon that intent and culture as against the appropriations made allowing the agency to function? They're telling us they're going to go to war. That's without a congressional authorization. Don't you think Congress needs to step up on the amount of money that's being used in the culture of the CIA to do that? Is the agency to be fomenting wars Congress has yet to declare? And what funds have been appropriated by Congress for that agency to have such a culture and intent and opinion anyway? Or to tamper indirectly with these elections? Even by this speech. Oh yeah, he has a right to speak, but don't be so naive not to believe it means something and what they're actually telegraphing. And these appropriations oversight functions, wouldn't it be proper for Congress to ask what the current positions are relative to Panetta as well when they hear this? If they're not separate and distinct and essentially contrary to Panetta, it also must be certainly sent the message that the CIA does not like Trump on the other hand, with this underwriting, if they're the same as Panetta's, and would be high on the terror watch list in the Trump assassination attempt, in my mind, relative to all this. See, the agency is also known to topple foreign governments. But again, the carnival mirror being such that it is, what they do out there, they're doing here. So I think there's enough elements to stack up that maybe Comer needs to get in on this one like ASAP, as well as the other ones he's investigating. And wouldn't it be very interesting to see RFK Jr., having just endorsed Trump, become head of the CIA, having access to the assassination files from his assassinated uncle JFK, and maybe his cousin JFK Jr. too? Unless it wasn't that JFK Jr. was a victim of spatial disorientation while descending over water at night, whereby he consequently lost control of his plane crashing into the Atlantic Ocean off Martha's Vineyard after vowing to identify his father's assassins. I just find that fascinating, a potential. Will it happen? Can it? Why does Trump need a commission anyway, either, is a problem question I have relative to all of that. But we are seeing an interesting dynamic in what appears to be two types of Democratic Party running for office. I think everybody right now supporting Trump, including Trump, was a Democrat at one time. Maybe not J.D. Vance. I don't remember. Anyway, all the big supporters that are now coming on, Unity, the Unity Party now, right? That's telling you. They're telling you all about it. So now, flying's not so safe here relative to the JFK Jr. problem. Let's maybe swim from the Atlantic Eastern Seaboard to the Baltic Sea, and there has been a very interesting development on the international scene relative to that slipping Hayd Gemini and the CIA. As you'll recall, explosions damaged the Nord Stream gas pipelines 2 years ago. The explosions left billowing gas from Nord Stream 1 and 2, the two major conduits that transported Russian gas to Europe, and prompted a huge, huge operation to find who was responsible. This week, the Ukrainian man wanted over Nord Stream pipelines explosions. A spokeswoman for Poland's public prosecutor's office, Anna Adamiak, confirmed that Poland had received a warrant from Germany seeking the arrest of a Ukrainian man named Volodymyr Z. Put all this together now. These are just interesting scenes in a movie, just seems to me. However, reading continue to read. Remember, Germany is one of the countries that had its infrastructure destroyed, and it wants to go after some guy called Volodymyr Z. The news comes after three German outlets reported that the man, described as a male diver, along with two other Ukrainian subjects, are believed by German federal prosecutors to have launched an audacious underwater attack on the pipeline from a sailing boat in September of 2022. So as far-fetched as that fairy tale was, Germany went with it. It's really stunning here. Quote, "Oh, what a tangled web we weave. When first we practice to deceive," close quote. One of the people picking this up, exactly. So here's the interesting part, subsequent to this German arrest warrant. Ukraine denied any knowledge. And then it's reported Ukrainian President Zelensky, Volodymyr Zelensky, approved the sabotage of Nord Stream gas pipelines, according to one officer who participated and three people familiar with it. On the other hand, it was reported early on here that Ukraine nevertheless did it in denying Zelensky approved, but it was General Valery Zaluzhny that ignored an order by Zelensky to stop it. Now, this Zaluzhny is actually an ambassador now to UK, for those of you that haven't been following that little part, these intertwined webs we weave. Now here, none of this likely happened. Ukraine is being scapegoated and creating its own ambiguity as well, all as a charade on top of this. But Germany has chosen this fairy tale, and we are now at liberty to follow through. So what is so interesting about that? The sowers of that fairy tale may not have thought far enough ahead, as I suggested at the time. If Ukraine did do it, Ukraine is not within NATO, and it would have attacked a NATO-protected country, which would call into application the North Atlantic Treaty for Collective Defense in Article 5. An attack on any member countries is effectively an attack against them all. So the interesting part, how does NATO justify defending a non-NATO country it is aiding in fighting another non-NATO country, but not respond in collective defense against a non-NATO country that just attacked the energy infrastructure, declaring de facto war upon one of the nations by the treaty, then, as it would say there, it means an attack and war against all of its members. So I think these warmongering psychopath idiots just painted themselves into a corner of non-existence, whether Germany for not defending itself from Ukraine or NATO for supporting an enemy of Europe. Where does NATO go from here for relevance now? Maybe Russia should accept, make it simple for them, and Europe disband NATO to bring peace within its borders and let the non-NATO countries hash it out for themselves. It seems to be the simplest way to go. and without NATO support because it doesn't exist by its own treaty obligation, and the European countries decided not to defend themselves, Ukraine military cover laundromat machine grinds to a halt fairly quickly, it seems to me. It all takes care of itself, all in this one little story, not being thought far enough ahead. Liars, I guess, will lie, and yet they can be caught up in lots of different ways. And right out the mouth of the Baltic Sea, where it enters into the Atlantic Ocean, now that we're on the western seaboard of the Atlantic now, another corner of non-existence we might paint ourselves into is the Siberian gulag, unless you hold on to the tangible, and in this case, even the fiat paper currency, as there's power in this at this point relative to digital. Cash is king. Many Germans remain uneasy over the prospect of looming digital euro. Thank you, German people, and the rest of you that do this too. The prospective looming digital euro and the controls that are coming with that. Remember, programmable currency. You should be really shocked about that. Cash-loving Germans are leading the charge in opposition in the digital euro among Europeans, with just under half saying that they probably or definitely won't use the new payment systems if or when it arrives. We interject here quickly. It's going to be very difficult to do this because they will make it mandatory. You won't be able to eat without it, kind of thing. If you can build up your reserves and weather this thing through and then come in mass, you'll probably be able to push this one through. As we've seen in some African countries do the same thing. But they still sit, the government still sit there to keep pushing and pushing and pushing until they do push it through. So it's, once they come against you, you can never let up. But Germans are among the leaders in Europe when it comes to the cash is king mentality, holding on to 500 euro notes long after the EU members' central banks had dropped them. Germans and other Europeans have an array of concerns regarding CBDCs, from privacy and control over finances to fear of overdependence on technology in general. The European Central Bank's assurances that the new currency will remain private and secure using encryption and hashing don't seem to assuage concerns, particularly among older generations. That's the weak link relative to them, so your younger generations have to pick it up quickly and be just as dogged against this new digital realm, the Siberian gulag, as your elders. And it should not assuage concerns, as I've explained, that the covert problem with the Siberian gulag citizenship digital tokenization. As we read, unlike decentralized digital currencies like Bitcoin, which come with their own risks, CBDCs have garnered their share of criticism related to their centralization. Specific fears over finance-related censorship, increasing centralization and politicized control over spending and savings, proponents say that the technology will promote innovation in payments, keep central banks central to monetary systems, encourage social responsibility. That's the hidden one, the new one right there. I keep talking to you about that. Encourage social responsibility. If you don't think the ESGs are tacked all over this, the Sustainable Development Goals, including through the potential programming of currencies to be spent only on a list as approved goods or services. So, but I think we need to have a massive monetary competition to determine which country can be the most cash king as we move to sound money, silver and gold coin, being it's the kingiest. No, that's a G, not a K. Kingiest, not kinkiest. Kingiest, which is sound money. We need to move through back out of fiat, back over to sound money, if we can do that. And I told you before, it's very powerful. It's a chasm between what the paper system does and what you would do tangibly in hard currency, if you will, the literal hard gold and silver coin that you would deal with people directly and can't use that paper product that comes out by the people that will program it already but can't do it at the speed of electrons. And this is BTWRLM 592 as we move from the out of the old tyranny into the new tyranny department, heading due east from the western seaboard of the Atlantic Ocean on a three-hour tour, and not to be outdone by France. An ominous warning to you Brits and everyone, actually, when we look at this, keep working out how they're showing us everywhere little spots here and there, how it actually works, because this is a global system that they've been putting together for a long time. UKPM warns of deep rot at heart of country. Well, thank you, Prime Minister, for admitting to it to us today. Thank you very much. There's deep rot the heart of your country. That's right. There has been, always has been. How do you Brits put up with it? I really don't understand. That's not for me to say. With his own approval rating faltering, Keir Starmer is set to blame the Conservatives for Britain's dire economic trades. Interject here quick. See how they take, you just make a poll. You put one poll or second poll. Two ends. Two distinct people, different ideas, and you can always foment a division in people. And so you got to, as soon as they start to do this, he blames the Conservatives. They're both together in a system to control you. But moving on here with the discovery here on this. Now we got rot inside the heart of the country. How does it beat? I don't know. It doesn't matter. British Prime Minister Keir Starmer will deliver a grim speech to the nation on Tuesday, warning people to brace for the unpopular decisions ahead, folks. Unpopular decisions are going to be made for you. Starmer is also expected to blame the previous Conservative government for the state of the country. Quote, we have to take actions and do things differently, the remarks continue. Quote, part of that is being honest with the people about the choices we face and how tough this will be. Frankly, things will get worse before they get better. Starmer will also pin much of the blame for a recent spate of right-wing riots on the Conservatives, arguing that 14 years of populism and failure encouraged the unrest and the rioters, and that the rioters were betting on not receiving any jail time due to prison overcrowding. Now, let's remember that this new tyrant aided the riots there by not immediately clarifying that a Brit had done the crime that caused this riot, and not an immigrant. However, Starmer's proposed solution have fallen flat. His response to the riots, which saw more than 200 people sentenced, including for harmful online speech, the prisoners released earlier to clear space for the rioters, sparked the accusations of the two-tier policing, while only one in six Britons support tax increases to solve the country's economic woes, showing you what the new tyrant is after, online speech that threatens his tyranny and coming unpopular decisions. Starmer, Fuller said, is squandering money whilst fabricating a financial black hole in an attempt to con the public into accepting tax rises and literally leaving pensioners in the cold. So if the first thing he doesn't do is restore sound money to the system, you'll know he's lying to you. And we already know that because, by omission, he didn't already advance that as an answer against any taxation and government operating within certain permanent constraints. Besides on all this, what he's after, harmful online content has nothing to do with the King's government being fiscally and monetarily sound, or being displaced upon the backs of the subject serf British citizens as either. And so there's a, want to be honest? Yeah, let's start being honest. He can't be. This is not what that's about at all. The article goes on, when there is deep rot in the heart of the structure, thank you very much for admitting that, you can't just cover it up like a cat box. No, you can't. Cat box cover it. Can't happen. They're going to try, though, aren't they? He's going to try. He's going to make some unpopular decisions. That's the cover-up. You can't tinker with it or rely on a quick fixes. You have to overhaul the entire thing. Tackle it at the root. Even if it's harder work and takes more time, Starmer is expected to say, quote, because otherwise what happens, the rot returns in all the same places and it spreads worse than before, Starmer exhorts. Oh, and remember, one pointing finger has three pointing back. So it looks like you Brits have your work cut out for you to cleave, scrape, and claw away that systemic corruption and all that rot admitted by Starmer to exist. And he is part of it. All that rot. Sounded very English, I thought, didn't it? And remember, these three bony fingers has you fighting amongst yourselves. But three fingers pointing back, he works for the king, who also incidentally found the plan to commit genocide in Palestine through another corruption and evil political movement called the state, having a government to displace and replace the local inhabitants that you're all rioting about now. They've already done this plan somewhere else. My dear Brits, are the rot he intends to cut out you? As he states in the article, because otherwise what happens? The rot returns in all the same places, and it spreads worse than before, as Starmer explained to us. And so goes the war on abducted populism, it seems to me. Sounds like, to me, you Brits have reached your past due date, clearly. And they're telling you all about that. It's fascinating as you watch this invasion going on. Again, planned. This is nothing that they didn't know about. But they've already worked some of this out down in the Middle East, haven't they? Another country. And it might be a good thing all this discussion about the stench and deep rot in Britain, coupled with the stench of this next story, has spoiled our appetites because the price of UK's favorite fast food skyrockets. The cost of fish and chips has surged by over 50% in the past 5 years, driven by sanctions on Russia, data shows. According to the industry representatives who spoke to the BBC, a mix of increased energy and labor costs, poor potato harvest due to bad weather, and the self-inflicted Ukraine-related sanctions on Russia, world's leading cod producer, where Russia is denying the U.S. fishing vessels access to the Arctic fishing grounds in the Barents Sea. When it ended that fisheries agreement I was reading to you about, signed in 1956, and further affecting the prices by withdrawing its fishery from Britain's exploitation, were the major drivers behind that spike. Okay, I added self-inflicted before, if you, I hope you picked that up, but no, it was self-inflicted, because that's what they did with those sanctions. I said it was spitting into a hurricane. In this case, it would be spitting into the tsunami holding all that fish up there in the Arctic. Western sanctions and the Russian countermeasures also affected energy supplies, which triggered a rise in energy costs for British businesses. Quote, "We've had the perfect storm of events in terms of cost pressures. It's not a cheap meal anymore," John Long and of Long John's Fish and Chips in Dorset, adding that the current economic climate is the toughest set of conditions he has seen in the past 3 decades. Quote, "People think that fish and chips is a cheap meal, and it just isn't. People are prepared to pay 15 to 20 pounds for a pizza, but they aren't prepared to pay it for a portion of fish and chips," Angela Cartwright, the owner of Kingfisher Fish Bar in Salford, said. But without an appetite because of Starmer's systemic deep rot and all that stench from the spoiled fish not being bought, the rising cost may not matter, right? Because who can eat? And without the sound of money, how can you pay for it if you could eat? Now, something that smells rotten in Denmark, though it happened in France. Very important story here. A lot to read in for under the skin. We have to surmise some of that, but we can start pulling stuff up, and there's people coming up all of a sudden, and this is what makes me think this whole thing is a big play anyway, but it's telling us the truth, some truths, so we got to pay attention. The war on the people and their first line of communication is under attack at this point, as I've been making reporting stories coming on. The war on journalism and the communication conduits that are going on. Start with, of many stories I could start with, I'm trying to go through and make a direction here. I'm going to start with this one. Snowden accuses Macron of taking hostages in this war. The detention of Telegram founder and CEO Pavel Durov jeopardizes the basic human rights of speech and association, Edward Snowden, former CIA and National Security Agency contractor, has said. It has initially reported here that the authorities in France believe that the 39-year-old dual Russian-French national is complicit in a range of crimes allegedly committed on his platform, arguing that insufficient moderation allows for Telegram to be used widely to break the law. Now, let me just interject real quickly. The Telegram's being used. Durov's not, is admitted right there that he's not doing a thing. And so this brings up the idea, why hasn't France, and I'm not going to talk too much more about this part right here, just that as I saw that, it caused me to remember I wasn't going to talk, I hadn't talked about it. Why didn't the French government go after Telegram in a civil side? Why'd they attack this guy directly on criminal side? Starts to indicate some things real quickly. So, remember that the crimes alleged committed on the platform, arguing that insufficient moderation allows for the Telegram to be widely used to break the law, but let me segue to another interesting use of Telegram to mitigate the need to kill people to stop the worst type of crimes. France and the West supports fostering and encouraging the hypocrites that they are, where we can read last week Major General Abdi Aladinov, the commander of the Akhmet Special Forces from Russia Chechen Republic, told RIA Novosti that Ukrainian troops taking part in the incursion into Kursk region had started, quote, actively surrendering. At about the same time, the media outlet published a video showing 24 Kiev soldiers from one unit voluntarily laying down their arms near the village of Kermorovska. They used the dedicated telegram channel to inform the Russian military of their intentions, the agency said. There's your evidence the Russian military uses this, and they're using it to actually save people. And so we can go ahead and throw this thing underneath a big wet blanket of old telegrams used for bad, but this thing is also used for good, and it's used by the Russian military, and likely the United States, and the CIA. In fact, that's where it starts when you start looking deeply in this. So is that what the West has against Pavel, giving Ukrainians a communication conduit to avoid being fodder to the last Ukrainian? In fact, one of the problems is Russia is increasing and extensively using the encrypted telegram, which is kind of interesting on its own. As well, the free speech and association here die where there is a country to be controlled or exploits by such things as sanctions and money made or laundered through this issue that appears to be sitting right there underneath the skin of this, that is all of a sudden not too keen a thing for the United States, the West, the CIA, or France. NSA whistleblower Snowden also used social media to respond, stating that the arrest of Durov is an assault on the basic human rights of speech and association. Quote, I am surprised and deeply saddened, that's all he is here, folks, just saddened that Macron has descended to the level of taking hostages as a meaning of gaining access to private communications, emphasizing that the move lowers not only France, but the world has citizenship of France. The United Arab Emirates, St. Kitts, Nevis, and his native Russia was apprehended shortly after landing in Paris-le-Bourget Airport on Saturday and is set to appear before a judge on Sunday evening, according to media reports. So much for that Statue of Liberty France gifted to the U.S., it seems. But I want to highlight actually something else as well. Pavel Durov, the guy who they arrested, the CEO of Telegram, has citizenship, as they said, in France, the UAE, and St. Kitts, and Nevis, and Russia. So do you see now, this is what it means to be a world citizen, being subject to the laws of any authorities of the world globally. Citizen means subject to. This is what the world citizenship promotion is about, being blockchained and subject to the demands of any official tyrant of any nation, everywhere. Being tracked and traced, the warrant was also here issued while Pavel was en route to France relative to its execution, although we hear that it was actually existed before. And think about his jets, actually his private wallet. Now, that's what they track. So let's just say, let's put this in a digital Siberian gulag future. They used his private wallet, jet, to track it. So let's just use those as an interplay. So that happened for this ready surprise execution when he stepped off his private jet. And about Pavel being free, and it's gone. Just like your Siberian wallet, when they get this control the other way. So watch this, how they're explaining to us, right through these stories. So isn't Snowjob Snowden going to be surprised about Russia? That he's a citizen, reportedly, in this worldly regard, remembering that Russia is where Pavel moved from, and Russia is what's imposing this new digital system. I think one of the most complete and most quickly done so far in the world. It might even be surpassing what we heard about China. Though I'm not quite sure, but anyway, that's how fast this thing's coming on. Ex-owner Elon Musk wrote Dangerous Times in his reaction to the post listing different countries where free speech is under attack. Also posted here, a POV, it's 2030 in Europe and you're being executed for liking a meme. So understand this angle of narrative going on as well. And it's not untrue, but you're watching how these parallel narratives are working to get us to think of some other, to not think of what we should be thinking of and into what we think they're talking about. See, no one will be left behind or escape the Siberian gulag when it comes in. And all I told you, this X is just another element of that in the future. Everything and everyone will be tracked and traced, subject to confiscation. The communication lines of the people are being attacked. The assault against the people everywhere, I think, has begun in earnest with this. Here, the West is the most geopolitically desperate as well, and I think why it's coming from France. The rest, I think, don't see this stuff coming, although now that it's in the open, it's being talked about much more quickly. I think people are coming to it more quickly. And as important, Pavel is being blamed for actions of others. Start putting these very important points together as we're, they're fielding these new, this new type of construct coming onto the world. And then notice, worse than all of it, these are just alleged crimes at best. And nowhere I know when a crime is alleged or committed in a city park or a town square is the mayor or the sheriff arrested for not stopping the crime. So maybe they should go after the CEO of Apple for allowing the use of Telegram on iPhones as well, if you understand what they're really starting to do here. They're starting to break down these major obstructions to having, well, lawlessness, essentially. So let's take a little bit closer look at what passes for due process in France and consider here how much the time does France need to move an allegation for probable cause suspicion as they now kick Durov's can down the institutional road. It's reported the warrant issued while Durov was en route to have dinner with the President Macron or lunch or something, which Macron's denying now as well, denied the invitation. But France issued Durov arrest warrants in spring, actually. So this gets back to the persecutor will issue these warrants and they hang around. And you'll notice, I think it's in this report that I'm going to read parts of it, Elon Musk picks right up on that. He goes, we need some clarity here. Because he's the next one, it seems, that may be on it. The latest news is that not in France, somewhere else, is going after X. France issued arrest warrants against Telegram CEO Pavel Durov and his brother Nikolai, the co-founder of the messaging app, in March, months earlier than officials previously claimed. So here you see the narrative and the lie within the officials, keeping everybody off balance and off focus. He is accused of complicity in serious crimes alleged committing with the help of Telegram and failure. So get that. He is alleged to have committed this with the help of Telegram and failure to cooperate with French authorities investigating them. The arrest warrants were issued on March 25th after Telegram gave no answer to a judicial request sent by French investigators earlier that French documents leaked by Politico by an insider said. So Telegram gave no answer. Durov didn't give an answer privately. The corporation didn't answer. This is where they should have left it until they've solved the civil side of this. And you hear this in the United States where they go after corporations. They don't go after the CEO and get him criminally. They go to the corporation that they try civilly, or they can go criminally first. They didn't do that here. So again, everything you see that's kind of unique, pay attention. I'll get to that as I read through here. You see, as I've been telling you, watch what's going on. The documents mentioned Telegram's almost non-existent cooperation with authorities in other cases. So to summarize here, investigators had nothing going, nowhere in their attempt at the persecution, and were getting nothing from Telegram to incriminate Durov or his brother to support their mere hunches, if I'm being generous, hunches, that the failure to be willing to incriminate anyone insulted a judiciary bureaucrat here is kind of astonishing as well, if I've got this correct. That's all this is. Some judicial bureaucrat got insulted because they didn't want to talk to him. They didn't want to incriminate themselves. Now, in the United States, that would be a Fifth Amendment thing if there was a crime coming on, right? So it seems like a lack of communication as well on top of this, and I think intentionally so. So since March, France had nothing, and all this time since March to find probable cause, still have nothing. As we can read, the warrants were requested by the cybercrime branch of the Paris prosecutor's office as part of an investigation into a child pornography case. Authorities did not allege that either Durov or his brother were directly involved in criminal activity. Do I need to read that again? Can we just leave that off? They did not allege. That was close enough. We need to go further. They did not allege a crime that these two committed at all. French authorities, this is going to be the new normal, I guess I'm pointing out here, why it's so important. This is absolutely improper, but here they're pushing it. French authorities have hours left to charge Durov with a crime before they would be obligated to release him from custody later on Wednesday. I think it's that 96-hour rule. Every country seems to have the same one. You get to be held for 96 hours before they have to cut you loose. So here, that's it. They were told they have to cut him loose. They have nothing. So France has nothing. But for the charade here, they're running out of time. Tick tock, tick tock. And understanding without probable cause, this is now political, which has been denied over and over by Macron. So what is this justice system of France going to do? Stay tuned to find out in next week's episode. No, not really. Here's what they've done to a presumptively innocent man. Durov taken to French court. So he's taken to French court, even if they haven't found anything. And since last spring, they have nothing. So no charges, mind you. Are you French folks put up with this? I can't even believe this stuff going on in the world. It has been going on. How we're crickets in the world. People are the same everywhere. The Telegram CEO and founder Pavel Durov has been transferred to a Paris courthouse where a decision will be made on whether he will be put under formal investigation following his arrest last week, according to several news outlets. What do you mean, whether he be put under formal investigation? So informal is enough to screw his whole life up on nothing. And with nothing, we're going to put him under formal. Well, yeah, they end up doing that. How screwed up this is. Durov's detention period expired on Wednesday, according to AFP, citing a source familiar with the matter. He was reportedly now been released from police custody and transferred to court for possible indictment. Well, they're just saying that they're going to do a formal investigation. How can there be an indictment? Well, this is the French system. This ain't justice. It's just us. So France still has nothing on Durov since March. The police held him until they couldn't. Durov was taken into custody as part of a broader probe into child pornography, drug sales, fraud, and other criminal activities on the platform. Durov also is being investigated for allegedly refusing to cooperate with law enforcement efforts to look into cyber and financial crimes. I guess you don't have the right to not incriminate yourself if that's what they're doing. But at any rate, so here, on nothing more than a hunch, unsupported since March, they decide to kick his can to the same Justice Bureau rats that also had nothing more than an unsupported, likely by now, unsupportable hunch, but which the judges were insulted that Telegram would not incriminate themselves or upon something not shown to be more than a fishing expedition, as I referred to earlier in the broadcast, much better stated by the Fifth Circuit. And now the same insulted justice system will decide, having received Durov from the investigator that turned up nothing, from their interrogators, their inquisitors, they turned up over without any probable cause found or shown, whether to further berate and defame and coerce or extort this presumptively innocent Telegram Durov and his brother is kind of astonishing, if I have this right. Do I have this right? Is that what's going on? They have nothing, and they're still going to do all this. You know, it's one thing to have some evidence, but nothing? They literally nothing. In these stories, that's all they're saying. Nothing. Really? Durov's arrest has caused a global firestorm, with many opinion leaders accused of Paris of cracking down on free speech and the claims that tycoon has detained at the behest of the U.S. Macron has said, however, that Durov's arrest is in no way a political decision, stressing that France remains committed to freedom of expression. Well, that freedom is a limit, a constraint on that free motion, isn't it? So he didn't say free speech or anything there. The other thing is, they have not a political decision. I explained to you when it became a political decision, when they didn't have any probable cause and they continued to kick his can from institutional office to institutional office. That became political. But we understand the underpinnings of this because they just mentioned as well what this is about relative to the underpinnings of what they're after. And it implies the CIA is involved as well. If France is interested in cracking down on organized crime, I think it should really be cracking down on organized crime within its own government processes and personnel. All these folks intend on restraining the liberty of a presumed innocent man without a shred of evidence to the contrary since March, it seems. And maybe this global firestorm should shift its focus because it appears to be a provided canard from free speech that they've offered. And this is the key that brings up the CIA implicitly, the promotion of free speech infringement. But that's canard that's been brought up. They should be shifting it over to that they should be insisting on providing lawful due process, not moving on nothing. But as you heard Kamala Harris, being a mere stroke of an official CIA's endorsed pen is not enough protection for leaving people alone until such time as the fishing expedition is lost at sea. This is what the people, the global firestorm, should be focusing on now. And a non-fraudulent probable cause showing that someone has actually done something criminal needs to be insisted upon by evidence. Instead of going, oh, we have no free speech, we need to be turning the firestorm on the lack of lawful due processes. And if these are the lawful due processes, they need to be changed. You see, they come up with an improper result. Merely obtaining a warrant is no longer enough here, especially since the institution of the rubber-stamped national security obsessions we've now hearing since 9/11. And the global conflagration raising institutional organized crime corruption everywhere would, as raising from the ashes, allow the establishment of a system providing actual justice. It would restore the high bar of presumed innocence and a much favoring no arrests or immediate release in the absence of substantial evidence, and would go much further to bring peace, that's P-E-A-C-E, go much further peace into what the people need to eliminate the lawfare that they use to oppress us or under color of state authority, and absolutely unaccountably so, it seems. So in this Durov matter, the warrant issuing upon no evidence but a supported hunch, its author and anyone relying upon it or their election to find probable cause. Every one of these officials were supposed to find a probable cause before they could hold him or kick his can down into an institutional office. They should be arrested and convicted and put away for a long time. Not covered up, excused by Macron, by his distancing excuse by of non-existent judicial independence. It doesn't exist. That's the political part of this. This accountability to global conflagration should bring about. The accountability ought to be applicable to any other official in any other country doing the same. As we're watching these officials, single officials being able to control people's lives on nothing, literally nothing. They make it up. They have abused their immunities. And they have been allowed to act above the law and to our irreparable harm, generally. There is no accountability under an excuse of independence or some other facade is our problem and provides the consent for the systemic governmental organized crime here to persist. We keep focusing on our freedom of expression, and this is they're doing actually doing this other violation to it. You fix that violation and our freedom of expression comes back. So in the United States, we have a slightly different problem, but it shows unaccountable systemic organized corruption nevertheless. But we have conviction rates above 92%, and what appears to me to be a universally a plot loss evidenced in Kamala Harris explaining the utter joy she had in destroying people's lives through the stroke of her discretionary pen, an immune prosecutorial pen. It's an immune prosecutorial pen. There's no accountability. It's unchecked by other bar members, such as judges. It indicates a global biased justice system operating independently of the law. Not just independent of a co-equal branches, as Macron might talk about. Again, you focus on the wrong thing. They get you focused on the wrong thing. Why the freedom of speech was put out there to focus on. It's the wrong thing, I think. Why I'm talking about a lot of this. And we could tell the judiciary is independent from the law because when you bring black letter law in challenge, it's denied to you. Any of us that have done this, we know that already. And don't think the prosecution data seems to prove out that rule of law and democracy bar member mindset or effect is isolated to Kamala. The stroke of a pen in justice is irreparably harming Durov, Telegram, and ultimately the global communication lines associating people. Stone wants to talk about a freedom of association. It's the justice system that destroys that. That's why he's sitting in Russia in a place that he has to be the citizen over. He doesn't have a freedom of movement either, a freedom of association because of the United States and what he's done and what he tried to expose. Whether or not he was part of the plan to expose that so that gives the government license to do it themselves, because now they're underneath the cover that's in the wild. As I told you, the main problem with that for us is. And they would use that against us. So the latest on this Durov event, with nothing prior reported, not even from the French police inquisitors, solely upon continuing the fishing expedition is started by a judicial investigator not independent of the state, with the stroke of the Kamala-esque prosecutorial pen, Durov is hit with 6 charges out of those 12 they said they were after. Fascinating import here. The 12 original ones are reduced to 6 on nothing. The other thing, he's barred from leaving France now. As the Paris Prosecutor's Office reports, a release issued by the Paris Prosecutor's Office detailed the Telegram founder was placed under judicial supervision and is forbidden to leave France in the interim. In addition to reporting to the police station twice a week, he has been ordered to pay a bail to the tune of $5.5 million. The list of crimes and offenses include complicity in the administration of an online platform for illegal transactions by an organized group, refusing to provide information or documents at the request of authorized bodies, and concealment of crimes as part of an organized criminal group, provisions of cryptology services aimed at ensuring confidential functions without a corresponding statement, and import of cryptology tools that do not provide exclusive authentication functions or integrity checks without prior notice. Funny, they're acting all without prior notice here either, as well. But anyway, Nurov is also accused of complicity in the distribution of an organized group of an image of a minor that is pornographic in nature, drug trafficking, fraud by an organized group, complicity in the transfer of provisions without legitimate grounds of equipment, tools, programs, or data developing or adapted for hacking and access to the functioning of an automated data processing system, complicity in criminal community for the purpose of committing crimes. That's what he's set up Telegram for. That's what he's physically doing himself, is what they're claiming right here. The charges, which could land Durov behind bars for years, mark a rare instance in which the CAO of a major online platform has been charged for alleged criminal behavior in a platform. So they can lay that on thick, can't they? Legitimizing their ham sandwich of nothingness. Sounds a lot like government projecting to me. How about you? They must get bail awarded by the word, too. $5.5 million. Man, what a racket. But it seems Pavel was ultimately released anyway. $5 million to a billionaire. Interesting. It was reported at one point that he was released on his own recognizance. I couldn't find any actual proof on that, but that would have been an interesting plot twist, wouldn't it? But bail reduced from $5 million to his word? That's what it should have been, actually. Again, presumption of innocence is important here to uphold, and presumed innocent also of with nothingness. The prosecutor can lay lots of charges, but you got to have some. There should have been some facts behind all that. Doesn't seem like there's much of anything, since they had nothing. The police could find nothing. The inquisitors could find nothing. Up until hours after he got put into the court. Apparently, all his gangland charges are not a threat to the public, either, if he's been given a $5.5 million bail. What's a million to a billionaire, right? And all of this political theater, just because Telegram didn't want to respond or potentially incriminate itself under an arbitrary and capricious hunch of some judicial officer? Arbitrary and capricious? Not much different than how we're treated when losing a YouTube account, isn't it? The same? But what have I said about things reportedly rare or unique, as we heard in that story, being reported? Again, it's noticed to us. The first occurrence in these sorts of matters to pay attention. This is much bigger thing that's going on that the rule of law or and democracy has in store to oppress us. And I use that just, that's the judicial side. Underneath what keeps this thing going is what I think is being missed. Not by everybody. I think I'm starting to see people talk about it. We're looking at a new thing, a new, if you're sheriff in town in a way, with this whole thing. This isn't about free speech, but who or what controls the conduits of speech. The intelligence service controls, I think, is essential. And arresting Pavel may provide the opportunity to the U.S. or the CIA. Now, that they've been probably waiting for because Durov has been saying no to everybody. This is an encrypted platform and it's going to be safe for everybody to communicate on. So much so the Russian military extensively uses it. I'm not necessarily agreeing with all that. I'm just saying that's what's going on. But by the by, as we see this attack, what might be underpinning it and who controls whom underneath the scenes relative to intelligence agencies. It's been reported that Brazil just outlawed ex-Twitter and will fine in excess of 8,000 fiat for using a VPN to use Twitter now, as they now turn, Brazil turns its attention from France to Durov to Musk in Brazil. So let me ask you this. Which group would you fit in with all those groups? You're on a social network. Which group is my listener affiliated with on a hunch that gets you on the wrong side of the bureaucrat or judicial or otherwise? I would have to say you can't tell. There's no prior notice of probable cause. It's based on nothing that has any probable cause-based concern, no opportunity to avoid, and no due process overall. So maybe this method of persecution comes to the next Comey swindle. Let's apply it now to something or another feigned national emergency. You express a disagreement with somewhere in the world. And the next knock on your door is indefinite detention rendition agents, Interpol. Remember those rules? And some of you listening thought I was talking about Durov over there, I'm sure. With these international systems, incrementalism is a creepy thing, used by creepy things, these mission creeps. So don't let the them sneak up on you with regard to this. This is what they're focusing on. They've turned it on us. These billionaires are a notice. We'll go after them, those that can defend themselves somewhat. They'll come after us. And there's no notice ahead. So we find out, Pavel finds out, freedom is not being free. And I've talked about this. Macron comments on Pavel Durov's arrest. The French president has claimed that the Telegram founder's detention is due to an ongoing judicial investigation and is not political. Writing on X on Monday, now attacked by Brazil. Remember now, Macron actually uses Telegram. All these people, these French officials use Telegram to communicate as well. But Macron insisted that, I guess they're all part of associates in the groups that are doing all these crimes too, aren't they? Macron insisted that Pavel Durov's arrest is in no way a political decision. It took place as part of an ongoing judicial investigation, which the judges will ultimately decide the entrepreneur's fate. So why do I have the urge to say Pavlov? Dog? Bro? Pavlov Durov? Pavlov's dog? Watch out here. Associating neutral stimuli with unconditioned stimuli is what we're talking. And then from Rumble, there's Pavlovsky, who grabbed his go bag and immediately skedaddled out of Europe on the same news. Pavel Pavlovsky? Maybe France is a thing against PAV. I don't know. Pavlov's dog. Interesting programming note here, I think. No, your brain, not this broadcast. It is up to the justice system in complete independence to ensure the law is respected, Macron has said. This may have nothing to do with salivating over the attack on free speech. Pavel Durov did not himself speak, or not yet reportedly so. As a side note on this, it is also reported that former Russian President Dmitry Medvedev said in the wake of Durov's arrest that he previously warned him that he'd have problems in virtually any country where he didn't want to cooperate with the authorities on major crimes. Virtually any country, folks. No country anywhere would be safe to be free from cooperating with authorities, making up or fishing to make up a major crimes issue for groups. Remember, the rule of law in countries are supposed to have lawful warrants for what they do, not back doors to use their phishing internets, as it were. While this could be a France and EU power-grabbing move, the so-called U.S. deep state is certainly implicated, if not more so. Quote, France is more than anything attached to freedom of expression and communication, to innovation, and to spirit of enterprise, Macron wrote, adding that in a state of governed by rule of law, on social networks as in real life, freedoms are exercised within a framework established by law to protect citizens and respect their fundamental rights. Innovation, he says, folks. Innovative word salad ways separating you from your fundamental rights reduced to revocable freedoms or privileges. Remember, as I've been saying over and over, freedom is a range of motion within a frame of constraint. He just said it. Right in his response. Rule of law and democracy is the rule of the race of lawyers, esquires, members of the gentry, the upper ruling landed class. Attorneys, attorneys, establishing a framework to protect only those fundamental rights that they, the kings, can get away with infringing through the independent justice system overseeing the open-air prison of the world, called nation states. But states in what territorial nation? Where is the landed United Nation? Ever thought about that? Insidious, isn't this? Additionally, Telegram has a token called TON, T-O-N, or TON coin, the value of which fell 19% on the news of the arrests. It is private and uncontrolled by the EU governments for now. Russian companies use it. The West has sanctions against anything Russia. That France arrested the close friend of Pavel traveling with him on his private jet, the crypto enthusiast and influencer Julia Vavilova, may be another clue as to what the government is really after. She was released soon after, but upon that suspicion of crime, to the arrest in the first place, where there is an investigation only now starting on the made-up charges of everything under the sun, it seems. Remember, those of the justice system can indict the ham sandwich and get a conviction. In this regard, there is no distinction between political or judicial, and Macron is tossing a word salad to appease the appetite of the hungry natives, unwitting captives of the world, that they want Telegram itself. They want the encryption keys to the Telegram kingdom. But what if Pavel does not have the kings and France had arrested the wrong one? Remember, his brother's involved. He's the actual brains behind all this. He's the programmer. He's the mathematician. He's the cryptographer. Russia only asked for access to the accounts it could show appeared to be conducting criminal activity, not the keys to the entire Telegram kingdom. This is looking just like the Kim.com situation in Mega, with a touch of Ross Ulbricht itself. And Kim.com has warned that the deep state through Biden insistence got Mega and not to continue to use it. So this is what's on the hook for Telegram. And on this collective note, the notice of investigation by France apparently also targets the groups Pavel aided, groups purportedly knowingly working in concert, conspiracy, together with which are also under investigation. Who are those groups? Understand how that sounds like a fishing expedition, a massive net, the internet. And there's no probable cause yet stated, nor a specific crime of someone using Telegram that he intimately was aware of or involved either. And responding to ex-Twitter posts highlighting this expansion of that fishing expedition by France, I asked Kim.com who mentioned users needed to be aware whether he thought that the groups would include only Telegram team or Telegram users or both. You know, the imminent reportedly conservative influencer Kim.com of the government stolen Mega file storage service has yet to answer either, as is want from these influencers, it seems. The Telegram, with its billion users a day, is ripe for governmental plunder. And if they have upped their game and involved all users in some potential national security communications crime conspiracy that they have cooked up in their fishing expedition for dinner, all users will be in danger of being charged with crimes made up by some foreign or domestic tyrant, whatever color of lawful authority it hides behind. Remember, Interpol was adjusted years ago to become the international rendition agent, and for indefinite detention, or as otherwise demonstrated recently with the Julian Assange saga, or the revoked 9/11 presumed terrorist deal. It's all right there for us to see if we put it together. The promoters here, direct democracy, Kim.com, while insightful, is not conservative. He straddles the globalist fence as well. The social networks are digital, and the technocrat surveillance too, of which the rule of law and democracy judicial promotes political sustainable development goals through here, which the Siberian Gulag will eventually rule if the people let them, is what is at stake, it seems. And this democracy is for dupes. The digital sewers of the Matrix is not a movie are looking more and more appealing, as I've been talking here years about this. The point being freedom, free domain, freedom, is not being free. Especially here when someone else, those thinking they are the upper ruling class, makes the rules called law. As you've heard, Durov's fate is in their hands, not his own. He's presumed guilty and that they have a jurisdiction over him before they have established probable cause for crimes that he intentionally and knowingly committed by his deed to hold him while they commence their fishing expedition to angle their poached catch already. This is the height of administrative tyranny by the executive branch under color of an independent judicial branch function that can be committed against people short of open war itself. The comments of the deceitful Macron Junta El Presidente of France notwithstanding. Yeah, he didn't agree with the election results, so he's facing impeachment. Sound familiar? Sounds just like somewhere else, doesn't it? Yeah, it's all kind of like that. In continuing disgrace, Macron uses the very same telegram to commit his conspiratorial crimes in trying to explain the situation to the world without suffering immediate warrant, arrest, or investigation, apparently to be attributed to Pavel. No one is above the law, right? Yeah. Pavel.com, Assange, and a host of others are enjoying freedom in democracy known as liberty. Go enjoy yourself, but only for a time. This much, and that far, and absolutely, positively, no further. Whether you were told how far, or whether we make it up after the fact, it won't matter. So soon it seems this liberty or democracy, the minority, this minority operating under color of the majority of voters only, consent, if you are even lucky to get that, is to include my listener, if they have their way. The petition for habeas corpus here is still looking more and more necessary to keep close at hand, as I've been saying for years. For those of you with an ear to hear in those jurisdictions that recognize the habeas corpus or can be forced recognition of something very similar, maybe through international law, or if not local to you. I've just offered in this discussion some of the things to consider, what to include, highlighting an unwarranted restraint of your liberties, the application of unwarranted democracy where you are otherwise free. Maybe we should reconsider the meaning of the Statue of Liberty, the gift from France that keeps on giving, the boomer embracing symbol which has gotten us here to mere liberty, not to the home of the free. I think hope something that I said will get your mind thinking about stuff, really think through, develop that, start applying it locally. I think we're seeing the same kind of conditions locally when I'm talking about the courts and things and how the executive undermines all this or comes looking like it's doing administrative judicial work. We're all susceptible to all these things. Some of you may have already experienced a lot of this, not to this international level. But what they do out there, they do to us. I'm asking us to start being aware of that so we can be prepared and better get out of the way. And I've already told you administratively, answer those letters, but do them within the black and white so they can't come after you, like I told you with the COVID swindle. And I think we'll be placed better. But now they're getting to the point they have nothing and they can still get that conviction. They can still steal money from you, get involved with your life, like Kamala Harris said. So powerful to be able to ruin somebody's life. And then just don't prosecute them. Remember that? This has been BTWRLM 592. I'll be with you next week. Tech Tips for Nature Willing.
Echoes call, the hour is near. Behind the woodshed, the truth you'll hear. Every Sunday, the clock strikes three. Hal's voice rolls like thunder, piercing free. Pull up a chair, lean in close. Lessons to learn, dose by dose. Behind the woodshed, no stone unturned. Next week, heed the call. Behind the woodshed, standing tall.